Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We're going to be talking to Madame Ruth Dreyfus, the former president of Switzerland. Yes, we got a world leader on the Distraction Pieces Network. So this is Stop and Search on the Distraction Pieces Network, brought to you by Acast in association with Elite UK. Here we go.
Behind your barricade. Yeah, but how long can I stay? Behind your barricades, where true values seldom stray.
Thank you so much for joining us. And as I said, we're joined by Madame Ruth Dreyfus, the former president of Switzerland. Now, how this one came about is that Madame Ruth Dreyfus now works with the Global Commission on Drug Policy. They're a group of world leaders, Sir Richard Branson, Sir Nick Clegg, the former president of Nigeria, Helen Clark, the former president of New Zealand, and of course Madame Dreyfus chairs this. What they do is they put out reports and a lean on opinion on drug policy. And their new report, which has just come out, called The World Drug Perception Problem, because yeah, we have a drug problem, but it may not quite be what we think. And we're going to get into that with Madame Ruth Dreyfus. So I need to thank Eric from the Global Commission for helping to set this up. And if you want any scrolling links and extra content, then it's going to be on acast.com/stopandsearch. And just have a look there and get familiar with all the different information we're putting out there. So if you want to follow us, go to @UKLeap on Twitter, @UKLeap on Instagram, UKLeap.org on Facebook, and of course on the internet, UKLeap.org. So here we go. Let's talk to Madame Ruth Dreyfus from the Global Commission. What is the world drug perception problem then? This is Stop and Search. So today is a day where we're talking about the Global Commission. It's got a new report out, which I'm not just saying this because you're in front of me, but it is a brilliant report because it focuses on areas that we don't normally speak about, which is the drug consumer. And this is an area that I think the conversation needs to be more applied to. Do you agree?
Until now, we published six reports, and they all were about how to change drug policy. But we felt that every change has to begin with a better understanding of who are the people who use drugs, but also what is the link between the perception the population have about the substance and the people who use the substance, because there is a kind of a vicious circle between how you perceive a problem, how you stigmatize people who are using drugs, how from stigmatization to go to discrimination, which means practical change in the life of these people and their acceptance by society. And then it is a very little step to go to say, okay, they are criminals, so let them be punished. And if they are punished, that's a good reason to stigmatize, to and so on. So we thought that as opinion leaders, as we are all, because of our former experience and responsibility, we should really be vocal on the perception. We are a group of responsible people, elderly people, and so on, and we think our voice can really show that we have to consider drug users as citizens, as all other citizens with all their rights, and that we don't have to judge their attitude as long as this attitude is not negative for other people.
So, and that's really interesting what you said about a global commission, because there are going to be some people that listen to this podcast specifically that are not aware of what's going on in drug policy. So how would you describe the work and the members of the Global Commission on Drug Policy?
The Global Commission on Drug Policy is a self-mandated commission. I mean, we decided to, as citizens of the world, to continue to be active in advocating for changes in the drug policy. We thought it was our responsibility, on one side, because we were also, some of us, for instance, thought that when they had the power to change the things, they didn't know enough to do it, and it was a kind of remorse that brought them to say, now we have really to fight for change. Others had experience about how change is possible. So that this initiative was taken, if I take the situation now of the Global Commission, by 25 members, half of them being former head of states or head of government, others being leaders in the cultural life, in the economic life. We are very proud to have people who, like Richard Branson, for instance, who played a very important role in the economic life, but also as promoting and inspiring new policies in environment, health, and so on. So this is the kind of people we brought together. And what is interesting is really that we are working together, we are studying together, we are in a kind of work in progress. Since 6 years, we are really learning every day more about the failure of drug policy, about positive experiences, but also about what I told being a vicious circle that makes it difficult to bring change. And this vicious circle is not only on national or local level between population and authorities, but also on the international level, where the international conventions are full of misconception about the drug issue. They are full of words like these substances are evil, showing that if somebody uses evil substances, he is himself at risk to be an evil.
And there's a great infographic in the latest Global Commission report that does literally show that vicious cycle of language, of what that can perpetuate. And I think that's an area that this report specifically addresses, is the key aspect of language.
Yes, it is the first time that we are not speaking only about the measures that should be taken, but about the view the population and the authorities have on the issue and makes it so difficult to change. So breaking this circle is absolutely key.
And it's a brilliant aspect to the report as well, that you've got testimonies from drug consumers, because this is an area, again, we're just not addressing, is that we're talking in terms of policy language. Of course, we need to do, but giving a voice to the people that actually are out there on the front lines consuming substances, that's quite an achievement that you managed to do, I think.
It's not only to give them voice, this was also made in the past, but to give the opportunity to the reader to see that there are people like you and me, that there are people who are able, for instance, to control their consumption, that there are people who have no link at all with criminal activities, that people are good fathers, good mothers, working people, and that the main problem they have is not to their relationship with the substance, but is the relationship with the the opinion of the people around them, of their environment, of the criminalization they are confronted with, and that it is one step more to understand that even if substances can harm people, using them, the atmosphere in which they are consumed, the political setting in which they are consumed, the fear to be criminalized and so on, makes it much more harmful than the substance itself may be.
We've got this perception issue, and this is something the report again addresses, that all drugs under this moniker of drugs are harmful and bad, going to be a blight on society, and yet we're still not addressing things like alcohol and how much that has an impact on society, because we're putting them into these arbitrary categories. How do we go about readdressing that balance in the general public's mind of everybody is a drug user within this conversation?
Well, I think what is very important is to have a more rational view on these different substances, their history, their cultural background, and it is not for us a matter to say that these substances should be consumed in a large number and without control. I mean, I was a minister of health for 10 years and I had to fight against a situation that is more problematic than the situation of the drug use, and this is the use of tobacco and the use of alcohol. But what we see and what we publish also in this report once more is that there is no evidence-based analysis about the harm caused by different substances. It is very important to give voice also here to a scientific view of the pharmaceutical content of some substances, but also the setting in which they are used, the role that criminal organization can play in putting always harsher drugs on the market or trying to attract people at a very young age. This is the reason why in our different proposal to reform, clearly one we think is the only one that will bring a very coherence to the whole way we address the problem of psychoactive substances is that they should all be under the control of the state and not in criminal hands.
One of the things that you were really a major part of was what's been dubbed Needle Park in Zurich. The first real time that heroin use has been assessed, but it also looked at the demographics that were consuming heroin at the time, and contrary to belief, it wasn't just the other, the person on the street, the ones that we associate with in quotation marks dropouts. These were normal people, again in quotation marks. Again, do you think we're going to be able to have a conversation anytime soon where people realize that we're talking about our sons, our mothers, our daughters, just ordinary people?
This is very important to say, and I think when I try to explain to the Swiss population that we have now to open the way, for instance, for more substitution therapy or inclusive heroin-based therapy and harm reduction measures, I often spoke about our kids. And I think this was well understood. It was well understood also because we gave also the possibility for the families of people who had drug use disorders, who couldn't control their consumption. We associated also the parents and the peers. Just to say an anecdote, in Bern, where we had also a little open scene or needle park, as it was called in that time, once a week, the people being in high school, 15, 16 years old, young people went every week, once a week, to bring food and to speak with the people who were there. And this was so beautiful to see that, they were peers in the real sense of the word. They never considered the people they spoke with them once a week were different than they were. And we had also the support of many families who were so despaired because they didn't know how to react. And I am always speaking here about people who were in difficulty through their use of heroin, for instance, and other drugs, and not the people, the majority of people who are able to control their consumption. But these people brought their parents, their family, their beloved one, once in a very difficult situation. They couldn't know to be cooperative, to help the people, to receive the money, for instance, to buy the stuff, or in the country to cut a relationship with them. So they were so despaired that they were asking the state to find the solution and to bring back those they had the impression they had lost them in the open scene and in this problematic use. So yes, I think it's very important to see not only the person who used drug, to make the difference between those who are able to control it and those who are becoming dependent, and because it is illegal, being also marginalized and perhaps having activities that are deal or prostitution and so on, because they have to find the money, or thieves also in the street to have the money to buy the stuff that was so necessary for them. But on the other side also to see the whole environment, the families, but also the neighborhoods. Take an example. Installing a safe consumption room is not only helping the people where they can, without being harassed, either by the police or by the dealer, a place where they can just rest and consume in a safe atmosphere with the help of professionals that are here to avoid overdoses and to bring some medical support, but for the whole neighborhood, it was something very positive because you had no longer people just lying around. You don't have syringes being forgotten somewhere. So, I mean, it was really necessary at the beginning to explain that it was not a place to attract problems, but a place to solve problems.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And that's what the Global Commission broadly, as well as this report, advocates, isn't it? A move from complete enforcement over to more of a not a medicalisation, but more in the terms of what we can do in social buffering, so that we can have more intervention, more in a way of supporting people.
Yeah, I mean, we resist to the medicalization of the drug topic, because for the majority of people, it is not a medical problem. Or let's say it's a problem that is similar to the public health problem that we have with alcohol or with tobacco, but also a problem that is more serious because it is illegal. But what is important is to say that the access to medical services when they are needed is so important. And in our last report, we show that there are also obstacles coming from this false perception of who are the people who consume drugs to the services. There are countries where you do not receive the service you need before being what is called clean. And when you say clean, you immediately think that if you are not clean, you are the opposite. So you have hospitals who are very reluctant, which are very reluctant to accept people, because it's true, they might be difficult patients because they have generally more than one problem if they have a drug abuse problem. They have also, I witnessed 20 years ago, that some of the people, because they were abandoned, because they were homeless, because they were jobless, because they were living just at the margin of the population, they had some wants that were like war wants. Terrible abscesses, and they were in difficulty to find the access to the services they needed just to keep a health status that was acceptable. Yes, so for us, what is very important is to work on, I would say, three different levels. One level is really the pragmatic answer. The pragmatic answer is not to hide the reality, to see these wants, to see the difficult situation of some marginalized people, to see that it is a problem of repression that is more targeting poor people, targeting colored people, targeting people who are in difficulty for other reasons also. This is the pragmatic approach. And the pragmatic approach is the harm reduction approach. The second level and the access to treatment when needed. The second level is the scientific-based level. And there you have really on one side to have a real approach, serene approach to these different substances. And these substances are not evil, as it is said in the convention. These substances are often double purpose. They are medicine and they are illicit drugs. And this double character makes it, for instance, very difficult in many countries to access to painkillers, because a painkiller is also often the most efficient painkiller. Morphine is also on the list of controlled drugs. So having a real analysis about what are these substances, for what they are good, for what they may be harmful, and to know also that having a more balanced policy will help to have better products also on the market. than if it is just in the hands of criminal organization. So the second level is the scientific evidence-based. It has also the aspect that you have to experiment new ways to inform the population about the good and the negative consequences of what you are trying. So to have an experimental policy, not just to know from scratch what should be good for the people, but to look really what are the effects of these policies. And for us, it's clear 50 years of drug prohibition had more, far more negative effect than positive ones. And the higher level is the level we try to analyze in this last report. And it is really the level of the perception. Why is it so that some substances are considered as evil? How is it so that people coming in contact with these substances are, from the beginning, considered as bad people? You know, the Attorney General of the U.S., Mr. Sessions, said last year, and you know that he is trying to go back to more rigid policy also concerning cannabis. He said, well, good people do not use cannabis. Okay. If you say that, you say to a whole population that people, and I think it's quite a majority of the people who once in their life tried cannabis, are bad people. And this will be the rationale for a bad policy.
And that is the case, isn't it, that we're getting to this polarization now where the reform movement has built quite a degree that on evidence and science, but we are getting pushbacks from the same rhetoric that's been fueling the war on drugs for the last X amount of years of good versus bad. People are still associated with certain drugs as being dirty, bad drugs, drug users. And we've used the example of heroin injection. Predominantly, these are the people that are the scapegoats, mostly in society. Do you think we are getting closer to being able to destigmatize our language? And this is something the report really does focus on.
I think so. And we have the good example of fighting the epidemic of AIDS. For many, many years, the vocabulary was people with AIDS, or in French it was terrible, sida. I mean, the people were reduced to one characteristic. They were bearer of the virus, but they were no longer considered as a person. And this changed. Nobody would now speak in the same language. Now we are speaking about people living with AIDS. And this is a big change. So let us make the next step and speak about people who use drugs. They are not drug addicts, they are not drug users, they are persons in the first line.
And you make the, I think most people would be surprised by this figure, that it's around about 9 to 11% of drug users tend to be problematic and 90% tend not to be. And this is something that we don't necessarily realise in society, that most people that consume drugs do so without any problem whatsoever.
Sure, but the people know by experience, for instance, that you can drink a glass of wine per day without being dependent on alcohol. The same can be for tobacco. It's more difficult because tobacco is really addictive, but at least it has no violent consequences as alcohol abuse can bring. But we have to show really that it is something humanity has always done, and it is looking for substances that can bring different moods. Huh? Some mood can be more, You can find some joy or lose some inhibitions or be calm. I mean, I am still a smoker. I do not smoke now, but I am still a smoker because I was dependent on smoking, and I could re-begin immediately if I wouldn't have decided that this is not a good thing to do, mainly for a former minister of health. I know from experience that it had a really calming effect on me. When I was stressed, I felt that the cigarette was a good way to calm down. You have people who need cannabis to sleep well. Others, for instance, people with living with AIDS or people living with cancer need cannabis to have appetite and to be able to eat normally. So yes, all these substances has reasons to be used or not, social reason, medical reason, all kind of reasons, religious reasons. And humanity has always looked for these substances. You know, not only humanity, even animals are eager from time to time. I know living in a region with vineyard, when you put the end of the wine production, it's called mare in French, you see birds coming and they are eating this, what comes out from this process, until they are drunk. It's very funny to see a bird being drunk, but they like it. So it's not to bagatellize the use. There are risks, but these risks are really overstated, over-considered, because people are also rational. They can also control what they are doing.
Do you think that we're getting any closer? And because the UK is very still quite stalled on the utilisation of cannabis as medicine and things like that. Do you think we're getting any better at addressing that subject? We work with an organisation called United Patients Alliance that's still out there fighting as we speak to get legitimacy in the conditions that they're dealing with, wanting to use cannabis to alleviate. Are we getting any better in this front?
Well, on one side, we have a pharmaceutical industry that is interested into the galenic form of cannabis. I mean, Sativex, for instance, in my country, can be prescribed for people with multiple sclerosis, but it's a very expensive drug. It cannot be prescribed for other symptoms or disease diagnostic, but you cannot take a joint, which would have perhaps the same effect. Not knowing exactly what is in the joint, I mean, it's not exactly the same way, but it can have a similar effect. So I think with cannabis we have the problem that it was put, which is really rational, has no relationship with the substance itself. It is put in the scheduling of drugs on the highest level. It is on the level of heroin and cocaine and without medical possibilities to use, which is silly. But it was also an obstacle to make clinical research to know exactly what are the different active substances into the cannabis, and there are perhaps 100 different, some balancing the effect of others, as you know, between THC and CBD. We have a lack of clinical studies about what cannabis is really good for or what are the effects. It's beginning. Israel is a place with huge research on cannabis. We have this example of cannabis being now used in isolated cases for this epileptic disease for very young children and very terrible forms of epilepsy. So my hope is on one side that we will have more knowledge when we accept the idea that cannabis is what it was in the past, also a medical device or a medical substance, in the meantime that it is just a mood-changing substance. So, yes, I think it's changing. We don't know exactly what will happen in the United States, where we have an ideological battle against the states that... with the support of a majority of the population, wanted really to introduce cannabis in a controlled market. But yes, I think cannabis is, in my view, the easiest problem to solve, because it's something that the experience with alcohol, with tobacco, might show the way for a smart regulation. Others are more difficult to regulate. I think it can go even to the prescription medicine, not sold in pharmacy, but only in special day clinics also. We will have a whole range of different ways of regulation. What is important is to know, when it is regulated, it is less harmful. When it is regulated, we avoid also what we call the iron law of prohibition, which brings the criminal organization to focus on the more potent and the more beneficial, in the sense of money, substance. The famous example that beer more or less disappeared during the prohibition of alcohol in favor of whiskey is a good illustration, because if you have to smuggle something, if you have to take the risk of seizure by the police, you concentrate on what brings more money and not what the people would like to prefer, perhaps to have an enjoyable evening together. We have different views. On one side, we will continue with what we call more technical reports. We had report on HIV, on hepatitis C, on the opioids crisis in North America. We will continue also with the exposure, or the risk, let's say, of resistant tuberculosis, which is also fueled by the situation of by the drug policy and by the mass incarceration in some countries. We will also show the link, because I mean we are eager to show that the drug policy is linked with the fight against poverty, the fight for human rights, the fight for housing, the fight for economic possibilities. I mean, many people are in the drug business on the low scale because they have no alternative to have an existence. So we will also show the relationship between drug policy and all the sustainable development goals. And I think we are linked with all the 17, I think, goals that are recognized as goals for the humanity until 2030. We will also go further in the proposal for the regulation of market, showing the different models can be chosen depending of the harm caused by some substances. And we will continue mainly also to develop country-to-country advocacy to organize the mayors of cities, because I think cities are the place where innovation takes place and where the worst problem perhaps are also now located, of marginalization and so on. And we are eager to organize on the model of what the West African Commission on Drug was doing, to organize regional approaches of the drug issue, because we speak always about the world drug problem. We speak about the world drug perception problem, but what is clear, it is there is a huge difference. Even if the basis of prohibition is the same in all over the world, there are big differences in the different culture and country and region, so that we have really to help this different region to find their common policy that would be a policy of respect of human rights, access to health, and fighting against the criminal organization in the sense of taking off their hands what can be controlled by the state.
Well, again, I can't thank Madame Ruth Dreyfus enough for that. I was just fascinated, and it was just such a privilege to be in her company. She's such a brilliant person. And English isn't her first language, but you wouldn't know it because she's just so eloquent with it. So thank you so much, the Global Commission. Thank you, Eric from the Global Commission, and thank you, Madame Ruth Dreyfus. So, and a few more thank yous. As you know, if you're a regular listener, we need to thank My Name Is Ad for all the artwork he does for us. Thank you so much, Ad. And also thank you so much, Nikki and Tristan, the producers that do so much work for us. Thank you for all you do on this podcast. Thank you to Scroobius Pip for having us on his network. And make sure, he's had some brilliant guests already in 2018, so make sure you listen to Scroobius. Also, make sure you listen to the rest of the Distraction Pieces gang. So we've got Tuesday Night Joy, Jim Smallman. We have Susie Gay, Say Why to Drugs. And we have Hardcore Listing Guys with Christian Stew. So make sure you listen to all of them. They're fantastic, brilliant entertainment. Great for a trip home. And I think that's it. Also, of course, yeah, I need to thank John, our social media guy, who does so much for us at our events as well. And of course, the whole UK League team. We're such a diverse, broad, spread out team across the country. Make sure you look on our website at ukleague.org, see what we're doing, keep up to date with us. Make sure you keep in contact with the Global Commission as well and all what they're doing. And I'll see you next time. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye. Behind your barricades. Yeah, but how long can I stay behind your barricades? Where true values seldom stray.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.